It feels like the behavior that we've become accustomed to engaging in online is starting to bleed into the physical world more and more. Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog, episode 14 for Friday, July 10th, 2015. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week is Gadget Week. We've got VR gloves, desktop milling, and a booze printer. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. Yay, Gadget Week.
Yay, I so need a booze printer.
I can't wait to talk about all these things.
Yeah, they all look great.
You want to start? Let's start with the desktop milling one. We were just talking about that before the show, and I know that that's of particular interest to you.
Yeah, that's really exciting. It is exactly what it sounds like. It is a desktop CNC machine, a 5-axis CNC machine. So it can do, you know, cutting along X, Y, and Z axis and do two different directions of rotation. And it's, yeah, a milling machine for that's small enough and presumably affordable enough. I mean, at the price now, you could get it if you were super enthusiastic about it, but it's only going to get cheaper as things like this become more common. But yeah, just a little home, at home milling machine. You can set up a milling machine without having to invest thousands and thousands of dollars in a huge dedicated workspace.
So I don't know if I didn't know what a milling machine really was before I saw this. So I had to read through it. And so if there's anyone like me in the audience, it's kind of like a routing table, like a router where it's got a mounted, it's kind of like a mounted drill bit or like one of those Dremel things that you see around Father's Day, but it like goes sideways. So it's like a drill, but it moves around in all different directions so that you can create stuff that looks like an engine block or like all sorts of things out of really nice materials, not like a desktop printer where you put in like a plastic wire and it makes this kind of very plasticky, you know, it's like an additive process where this is a subtractive process where you get a block of aluminum and you turn it into like some kind of part for your bike or whatever.
Right. Think of it as, in that sense, it's kind of the opposite of 3D printing. It's not laying down material. It's cutting it away. And you get much more precise materials. You can cut out or much more precise finished products, and you can cut out of much harder and stronger materials. And like there are 3D printing filaments that have metal in them or that have wood particles in them, and so you can sort of get different types of materials in your 3D prints, but they're not going to be, it's not like functionally strong metal. I think of it as more of a decorative or a light use type of finished product, whereas a CNC machine, you're talking about you can mill out solid metal load bearing heavy pieces and precision parts and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like having a machine shop on your desktop.
Yeah, exactly.
And this particular one is called the Pocket NC, the first 5-axis CNC mill for your desktop, and it's on Kickstarter, of course. And it's actually quite beautiful. It's really, really cool looking.
It is. It looks really, like, it looks like a very finished product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this thing's for real.
Yeah, and it's wicked well funded at this point.
Yeah, it's not it has hit the goal. It's geez, 5x, a little more than 5x with 10 days to go. So obviously people are into this. The prices for it at this point, it seems like it'd be around $4,000 or $5,000 if you were just gonna buy it, because they sell it, they've got it for sale at, you know, some levels that are really low. I'm sure they were just trying to get some traction.
Yeah, that still seems like, I haven't done a lot of research on CNC machines, but off the top of my head, that still seems like about like half the price of a basic machine. Like, I think you can get them now for starting at around $10,000.
So this one's a deal, basically.
Yeah, I'm sure it does much smaller components. I'm sure the more expensive machines can mill larger components. And this being quote unquote desktop, I'm sure you're limited in part size, but it is definitely a more cost affordable entry into sort of milling machines.
The cool thing with 3D printers is that you can prototype physical objects very quickly and cheaply. Mm-hmm. So, but they're prototypes. They're not the kind of thing you'd actually ever use, unless it was just decorative, or maybe you're making a toy for your kids or whatever.
Yeah, I can print out, you know, can print out terrain for D&D or something.
Yeah. The thing that's really interesting about this to me is that you can use materials that, you know, like you said, are potentially load bearing, or at least are going to have a lot longer life. So what that enables is that if this was a common thing to have, you know, if a fair number of people had these, then a marketplace could rise up where people just sold plans for whatever, you know, little yeah. parts of a motor or screws, you know, particular screws for something. So instead of going to, this is an exaggeration, but instead of going to Home Depot to buy a pack of screws, you could print out some.
Right. You could just mill some. That sounds ridiculously inefficient, but I get what you're saying. And especially for highly specialized parts, like maybe you're restoring your vintage something or other and need a part, a gear.
Yeah. That's a perfect example. Erica's dad restores old cars. And he's got to drive all over the Northeast to find, like...
just a window crank.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No joke. And when he gets there, it's either messed up or it's incredibly expensive. If somebody who had one of those window cranks, or maybe even the original manufacturer, they could sell a digital version of it. You know, it's like basically free for them to infinitely reproduce the plan. But they could sell it for $5 or something. And Erica's dad could load it into this CNC machine and print out a window crank.
Yeah.
And that, so that what's crazy there is that you can create a digital, infinitely copyable product, which is the plans, the 3D plans.
You could download a car.
Yeah, piece by piece.
But there's already marketplaces like that and huge communities of people sharing objects and plans and models and things for the 3D printing community.
Mm. Well, so there's an interesting down the road potential effect of this is that I've read this. I haven't seen it come to fruition, but I've read that UPS stores are buying or going to buy machines like this. I don't know if they'll be CNC machines or they'll be 3D printers or what, but the concept is instead of shipping that door handle from Maine to Providence, the person in Maine would just email the, you know, you, Erica's dad pays the guy in Maine. The guy from Maine emails the plans to the UPS store. The UPS store prints it out and, you know, Chris goes and picks it up. Mm-hmm. So, like, think about that. That's like, that's like beaming it down.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's a good point too. If you have another possibility, if things are too expensive to invest in yourself, imagine a business that does this, and you can go in and buy them for a fraction of the cost of traveling all around the place and buying a physical, like, old, odd, hard to find gear and having it shipped to you
Yeah, I could imagine a business of, you know, somebody who goes around and has some kind of scanner. And I've seen these. They don't appear to be that great yet, but where you can scan 3D objects, it turns them into a 3D representation, a digital 3D representation that then you could beam to somewhere else and have it printed out. So if there was a way that someone could get in their car, almost like the Google Street View people, could go around and go to like these junkyards or these dealers and pay them, maybe give them a percentage or something, and just go around and like, what are the most sought after pieces you have in your junkyard, dude? And they go around, they scan them, they turn them into 3D digital representations, and then they split the deal maybe with the guy who owns the window crank, and have, you know, they could just go around making these scans and then selling them. It'd be so crazy.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? This is totally different, but it kind of reminds me back many years ago, early 80s. My dad had an old TI-99 computer, and his friend also had one, and they would collaborate on like they were writing a software. Like, for instance, they did like this clock, and my dad had done, it was like just a graphical clock that appears on the screen, and my dad had coded like the clock face and the workings and all that, and then his friend had done like the code to draw the case and housing and stuff for the clock, and they just before like at home modems and all that stuff, and they sent the code like through the ASCII like to each other over a 2-meter ham band late at night. It's like they're beaming around the software. And it kind of reminds me of that. It's like, oh, that's cool. And they're like, well, let me send you the plans and you can just mill it out.
Yeah. Very, it's very interesting. Example of the trend of dematerialization of the physical mm-hmm. world.
Yeah. And it also opens up, makes a lot more affordable the possibility of artists and artisan makers for creating new things, let alone just replicating things that already exist.
Absolutely. That's the way the trend usually goes. Like once something becomes digital and it can be delivered in, you know, on demand in real time, it of course changes the whole notion of the supply chain and just in time production. You don't even need to do that. But what tends to happen, and this happened with the Kindle or eBooks, and we've talked about this before, is that the fundamental nature of like the hand crank or whatever it is can suddenly be manipulated in a way where it never could before, and you end up with an actual new thing that is better than the original in some way that's almost impossible to predict. Excellent. So that is the Pocket NC.
Yes. And now shall we segue into an item that's going to let you check out and get a feel for this 3D model you're about to print before you print it?
Yeah, let's. So this is like straight out of the book Ready Player One. It is a virtual reality glove called Glove One.
Yes.
Also on Kickstarter. And what it does is, you know, you link it up. The presumption is that you'll have something like Oculus Rift goggles. If only we knew someone that had Oculus Rift goggles.
Oh, we have them, but someone's husband forgot to check and make sure that he met the minimum system requirements before he ordered them. So yeah, he's custom building a thing and a new computer and won't have all the parts until close to the end of the month.
Oh, end of the month, bummer.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to hear.
He has to wait on a processor.
Hate that.
To get the one he wants.
Well, the idea of Glove One is that it's like it's a peripheral the way that Oculus Rift or something like that would be. So you'd have on the gloves, you'd have on the goggles, which is exactly like Ready Player One. And
yes.
There are 10 actuators, so things that vibrate, distributed along the fingertip, the fingers and the palm of the glove, and they vibrate independently and at different frequencies and intensities, which apparently, according to the people who have used it, fakes out your hand and mm-hmm. can create the sensation that you're holding something that feels heavy. It can create the sensation of texture. So you can move your hand around like a virtual tree and feel the bark.
That's like, crazy to me. I can't imagine something so detailed that you can actually feel different textures. But
yeah, and let me tell you, the one thing I like about the Apple Watch is mm-hmm. that the haptic engine is amazing.
I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah, it is it's not even in the same class of any other like phone vibration or like the Pebble vibration is just so clumsy compared to the way Apple did the Taptic engine. Mm. It is really amazing. So I can imagine that that the glove, I don't know that this particular glove is that great, but it could be.
There's the potential to be.
Yeah. And they are, looks like $199 per glove.
Well, that's not bad.
Not too bad.
So you could order a Glove One and then a Glove Two.
Could I get two Glove One?
Yeah, I'm going to get a Glove 11.
But and they are not one size fits all. That's a drag. They look a little stretchy, but I'm imagining there's different sizes. But this is really, it is definitely cool, and I definitely want it. And the combination of the goggles coming out from everybody and stuff like this coming out is so futuristic that it almost, I'm not creeped out by it, but I just feel like it's going to be such a big deal that we have no idea what is going to happen.
It's going to revolutionize the porn industry.
That's for sure. Yeah, you can imagine other sleeves, whatever.
Underwear One.
Man, so I don't, but, like, there's a pic, here's the thing. This is why I can't, this is what I can't articulate.
Okay.
In the video, they go back and forth between a person operating in like a virtual reality environment, like inserted in there. And then they mm-hmm. cut over to the person actually in the real world. And and it's like, oh, cool. You know, that guy is like interacting with the Mars rover or whatever.
Yeah.
But then they have a little girl who's like 5 sitting in her room on the floor with goggles on and her hands. And she just looks like she's insane. And her mom is standing behind her, like smiling at her and nodding happily. I'm like, no, that is like not the face. This little
girl is going crazy and with these gloves and the headgear. And
yeah, just, it's like she's losing her mind. It's very unnerving.
It's like watching someone on an acid trip.
Right. It's kind of what it is. I mean, you're not there. That's my experience with VR goggles, is that it instantly tricks your brain enough to transport you away from the environment you're actually in. So like if you know, it's occurred to me on a number of occasions that instead of like an air mask, mm-hmm. if a plane was like crashing, they should drop VR goggles. So you'd just be like, oh, I'm not.
Everything's fine.
Yeah. I'm not in a plane crashing. My plane's not crashing at all.
Oh, look, a parachute.
So, yeah, it's just, there's just something about it that I'm not ready for. I want it to happen. I think it's going to be so cool. It's going to unlock unbelievable potential, but there's something about it that's creeping me out.
Yeah, it's like it pulls you out of the world.
Mm.
It's like a disembodied sort of, it's like an out-of-body experience.
Yeah. I said in a previous show that I could imagine coming home to Erica sitting on the couch with like VR goggles on mm-hmm. and tapping her on the shoulder, like asking her where she is, even though she's sitting right in front of, oh, like, you know, like now she'll be on the phone. I'll be like, oh, you know, what's going on Facebook or whatever. You know, what are you, you know, she'd be laughing at something on her phone. Like, yeah, what are you doing? I can see she's sitting there looking at her phone, but still that's not what she's doing.
Right.
So I'm curious if she's reading Facebook. Like, yeah. But the language, all of a sudden, the language that pops to my mind, if somebody's sitting there with goggles on, is you're going to ask them where they are, because they're in a space as far as they're mm-hmm. concerned. So, you know, like you could, it's weird. I'm not ready.
It's going to do leaps and bounds for human interaction.
Absolutely.
You're not going to be like completely isolated from other cultures and on, maybe it is on the opposite side of the world. And I mean, as it is now, you can talk to someone on the opposite side of the world and you can form friendships and things with them and that you can become, you can get an understanding of their culture and their life, but you can't experience it.
Hmm. And you know, if you, and yes, you're not experiencing it if you have gloves and a headset on, but the current experience of interacting with someone on the other side of the world is like black and white silent film compared to what we're going to have. Mm-hmm. So it's everyone who does it says the same thing, which is that it's good enough to trick you into thinking you're somewhere else.
Yeah. And the combination of the glove with the headset, and you're hitting two of your major senses there. You're getting three: sight, sound, and then the tactile feeling of the glove, which is just, I don't know, it's like on its own, you go, that's kind of cool. I could look at a 3D model on a monitor and feel it, but combining it with the virtual reality headset is crazy.
Yeah, and I read this thing recently. It was a great blog post. I think we both read it. We'll link to it in the show notes, about how science fiction is really a design process.
Yes, I was just going to say we should link to that.
Yeah.
It's a great, great article.
Yeah. It's about the team that's working on HoloLens and, or they're it's somebody, I guess it's NASA.
Yeah. Yeah. Team at JPL.
Yeah. Jet Propulsion Laboratory. They partnered with Microsoft to realize this goal of theirs, which is to work on Mars from your desk. And they're like putting it together, and I don't think it's a gimmick. I think there's a fundamental increase of information and connectivity that they'll have in a collaborative environment, and also experiencing this, you know, I want to say virtual environment. It's a real environment, but they're experiencing the virtual version of it. Yeah, it's
a virtual representation of the real environment.
Yeah, like putting yourself inside of Street View on Mars.
Right.
Anyway, okay, so that's probably enough about Glove One. I expect that there will be a lot of things like this.
Yeah, yeah. And if this is all creeping you out and you need to relax and just... I'm trying with the segues today.
Like
I'm trying.
You're the segue master today.
I am really trying.
But I'm impressed.
That one felt a little weak, so... Let's just go with it and start 3D printing some alcoholic beverages.
Exactly, exactly. I'm sure everyone listening knows what a Keurig coffee maker is.
Yes. If you don't,
it's a coffee printer, basically.
single serving little coffee machine, and you put these little cups or pods in it, and you push a button, and it forces like high pressure or hot water through it, and you get a cup of your favorite brew, be it coffee or tea or hot chocolate or hot apple cider or any number of other beverages.
Yeah, and it's great because you can have for a variety of reasons, mm-hmm. but around the house you can have people that have two different flavors. You don't make one big pot of coffee in the morning anymore.
It doesn't make particularly great coffee, but.
Right, but it's good enough.
It's good enough. And it does, like, we use it more for things like teas and apple ciders and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I love the apple cider. Yeah. So, wouldn't it be cool if you could do the same thing, but with cocktails?
Yes.
Well, now, dear listener, you can. Thanks to Bartesian, the ultimate home cocktail machine.
I know, is it the same sort of thing where you put in a pod of...
It is, yes. It looks like a pretty high-end espresso machine with four glass receptacles mounted next to the body of the thing. You put in the four basic spirits in the glass containers around the side, vodka, rum, gin, and tequila. Mm-hmm. And then you buy these pods that look exactly like Keurig pods, but instead of them being powders or any kind of dry mix, they're actually liquid mix.
Okay.
And the recipes were created by, like, they got this, you know, professional mixologist. I used to call them bartenders. that came up with these recipes. So you buy the pods, you put it in, and boom, you've got, like, whatever, a Harvey Wallbanger.
Yeah, it makes your mixed drink for you.
So you can, you put in pods, and they have, right now, margarita pods, Sex on the Beach pods. That might go with the underwear one. Cosmos, Zest Martinis, Bartesian Breeze, and Uptown Rocks, which I guess are two special ones that mm-hmm. they purposely, you know, they made just for themselves, signature ones, right, they call them. So what's cool about this? I give this talk about dematerialization and, you know, world being transformed into a digital representation. And this is like the same kind of thing that we talked about with the CNC printer. You could see instead of having these, instead of having just one pod that went in the middle, if you had flavor cartridges, like a whole bar setup, like you'd have bitters and whatever, mm-hmm. triple sec, and you'd have all that stuff. And then
and you end up with like an alcohol vending machine.
Yeah. You download a recipe, you buy a recipe, and you've assembled all the ingredients and you keep the thing full, or perhaps Amazon Dash sends you refills automatically.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it could easily work.
Drunken Alexa orders.
Yeah. Alexa, give me another. Or whatever. Alexa shuts off your car ignition. Well, I do like the fact that you can, you know, you don't have to make, if you're having a party, you don't have to make like a pitcher of margaritas. You can have the same thing with the Keurig. You can have like decaf for one person and like a dark roast for someone else and like tea or apple cider for someone else, you know? So, I don't know. I think there's a clear trend. I don't know if this will catch on, but it does remind me of the CNC printer in the sense that it starts to set up an environment where people can digitize cocktails by deconstructing them into a digital representation, the info part of the recipe.
Right. You have to plop the ingredients into it, but if you can download recipes.
Yeah. So, you know, we're getting closer and closer to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I suppose.
I guess. How are those recipes delivered? Are they like encoded on the pods themselves and like some kind of QR code that gets scanned? Or,
well, that is me fantasizing. The pods currently have all of the, or pre-mixed.
Oh, okay.
So the premix pods will... Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, they do have... So they know which booze to pull in. Yeah, they have a little barcode on them. Mm-hmm. And when you put it in, presumably it, the machine recognizes the barcode, so it knows how much of each of the four liquors that are around the outside to pull in.
That it needs to add. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can set it for... You can ask it a bunch... it's just like a Keurig. You can set it for, like, virgin, normal, or double shot... triple shot. Yeah. You know, you can make it a little harder on yourself, I suppose. But yeah, it's the trend, the sort of, like, I didn't think about it before the show, but there's a lot in common between the CNC machine and this thing. It's I probably wouldn't use them both at the same time.
No, that's probably not recommended.
But if you do, make sure to wear gloves.
Yeah. At least one glove.
At least one. Ba-dum-psh. Anyway, people should check this out. If only because the video is super funny, because you can, like, these guys had to test this thing over and over and over.
So do they get drunker and drunker as the video goes along?
You get the impression that they've been drinking a lot. It's pretty funny.
We're in the wrong business.
Seriously. But the thing's not that expensive. I mean, for something like this that did espresso, you could easily spend $1,000. A Keurig is about $100. Yeah. These look like they're going to run around $300. And it's a nice looking thing. It almost looks like one of those mixers, those really nice mixers. Erica's got one.
The big KitchenAids.
Yeah, KitchenAid. It looks like a KitchenAid almost. It would fit perfectly next to a KitchenAid. I don't know. This trend is very interesting. The more and more stuff like this is going to, it's just going to proliferate. Like, I keep joking about it, but there's going to be a pizza printer. I promise you there's going to be a pizza printer.
Yeah, we have a lot more. A lot more things are like, oh, make it at home. Hmm. It's kind of, and I've kind of noticed it just culturally. We're kind of seeing, like, over the last few years, a sort of revitalization of this whole quote unquote maker movement. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just probably because sharing and learning and distributing and disseminating information and finding things and all has become so much easier now. So, like, if you want to do something complicated, whereas before it may have been difficult to learn, now you can go to YouTube and watch a video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think we're just going to see more and more of that type of thing. And I think it's really cool because I feel like individually, as individuals, obviously individually as individuals, like individually as large groups. I swear I'm not drinking from the coffee vending machine or the alcoholic vending machine. Because individually, I feel like we're becoming a lot more creative or maybe expressing creativity a lot more.
It does seem like that. A lot of the digital tools have enabled an explosion of creativity. Certainly, a sort of democratization of the arts, especially mm-hmm. like movie making, which was relegated to very, very few. And it feels like the behavior that we've become accustomed to engaging in online is starting to bleed into the physical world more and more. Mm-hmm. And machines like this will enable that kind of interaction. Like, you could easily see this becoming a two-way thing where if this thing's not connected to the internet, but if it was, you could easily imagine someone making drinks for someone else that wasn't even there. So you could just, like, you know, yeah. You put on your VR goggles, you go to your favorite bar, you order a drink in Second Life, and the actual human being who's behind that avatar makes your drink that pops out of this thing. Boom. Full circle. Like, you know, like, that's another joke that I made at that food conference I went to. I was like, you know, you guys all sitting here running restaurants thinking, oh, we're immune from disruption because you can't eat food online. Well,
now you kind of can.
You kind of can. Yeah. So it's super, super crazy. Anyway, that's probably enough gadgets for this week. I think those are all probably, fun ones.
Yeah, I'm getting kind of hungry now.
Getting thirsty.
Well, you started talking about pizza printers.
Yeah. Yum.
That's going to happen.
I mean, you get bread machines, right? It's only a small step to a branded bagel machine from Panera, let's say. You know, it's just a small step. The problem is mm-hmm. keeping the ingredients
fresh.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, this is super sci-fi, but I have to imagine that it'll need to be manufactured ingredients, not out of some slurry that's in there that it turns into like textures and flavors that represent like pepperoni and whatever, peppers, cheese.
We're all actually just eating Soylent Green.
Right, exactly. And it's like sounds so nasty, and it won't be as good as real pizza, but it'll be good enough. It's like the coffee. It's not as good as great coffee, but it's super convenient. It's good enough.
Yeah, it's good enough.
Better than Domino's.
Yeah, I'm gonna go get a pizza now.
All right, folks, that's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
I gotta write bye in the script. I'm that dumb. I can't remember to say bye. I have to write it down.
Yeah.
All right. Would you like to support Terrifying Robot Dog? Just think of two friends who would dig the show and send them to terrifyingrobotdog.com. Right now. Seriously, do it now.
We'll wait.
If you don't have two friends, you can still help us out by leaving a nice review in iTunes. Thanks. That didn't come out as funny as I hoped.
Yeah, it didn't.